Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined this Thursday by Mr. Danny Carter and Mr. Kyle Dvorchik. Surprisingly newsy week, even though this is usually kind of one of the ultimate Bermuda Triangle weeks of NFL news. We have the greatest player in league history retiring. We have one of the best coaches of the past 20 years coming out of, quote, retirement and going to coach the Denver Broncos, Sean Payton. And then, of course, the biggest news in the entire week, we have my Seasons in Review article where I write a paragraph on each team, just breaking down what their 2022 was like and what their 2023 could be like if these five weird tricks happen. But we'll just start with Tom Brady, where it's like the greatest player in league history retired, and it's like didn't even feel like a big deal.
No,
because he had already done it last year. And like he felt self-conscious about that clearly and wanted to make it like a very low-key thing and succeeded. Yeah. Or, I mean, I feel like people are talking about it, but you know, nothing like it was last year. Nothing like it is for some of these quarterbacks. And it's kind of a strangely, like, I would say, like, unfortunately low-key way for Tom Brady to be going out.
Everyone recycled their 2022 Brady in memory.
May God rest his soul.
Pieces. I'm talking about national columnists, New England columnists, Bucks writers. They were all like, yeah, here's what I wrote last year. If you guys want to read it again, nothing really changed this past year because
I mean, so bad.
They set the single season completions record.
For the second year in a row, Roto Pat just called him a system quarterback, said he could beat him in a foot race and logged off, which was the exact same thing he said last year. So yeah. I get the you know, not a ton has changed, right? Like he was still the GOAT then, he's the GOAT now. We purged the sort of nostalgia from our systems last year, and Pat just told the truth again.
For the record, I did not say that. But I will say, let's stir it up right now. Do you accept the premise that he is the no questions asked greatest player in the history of the National Football League? Do you accept this premise?
For now.
Yes, let's do it. I also think of course I'm a Zoomer. I think Patrick Mahomes is probably the most talented quarterback we've ever seen.
Sure.
But
sure.
Like the connotation of greatness is about like success, longevity, these types of things. So for now, again, Mahomes, he will be chasing him. Like he's, you know, three Super Bowls in 4 years. And like the things he does, I physically think I have never in my life seen anyone else do. And I don't think I've ever really seen anyone come close. But greatness is about like sustained success and yes, being larger than the game. And those things, 100%, it's Brady's the GOAT. And it's a pretty, pretty, pretty big gap.
I do think it's unfortunate for us Mahomes truthers who I mean, you know.
Mahomes could challenge him.
If anybody's being honest with themselves, they will say that unless Patrick Mahomes, you know, knock on wood, suffers some sort of catastrophic injury, he's going to surpass Brady as the best to ever play. If you don't strictly count by Super Bowls. Now, if you do strictly count by Super Bowls, Mahomes is probably not going to pass him. That probably not even going to get close. Okay, like a really great career for Mahomes is four Super Bowls, four Super Bowl rings. Okay,
it's true. I mean, three is a really great career.
Yeah, so you know, just say three, I know this is like a weird projection, but like 3 or 4 rings for Mahomes in 6 attempts or something. I don't know, something like that. And
would be incredible. He'd be like the number 2 all-time quarterback, yeah, and he would still be leagues away. And he also has the monumental task of playing till he's 45. Like that is like, that's like Jerry Rice was the best receiver pretty clearly. And he kept being a top 2, 3, 5, whatever receiver till like 41. It's like him and quarterbacks who got passes deflected back at them that hold the X catches after 40 years old records. And that's what, I mean, that's what Brady's going to be. He's going to have every single record unless someone can play 20 some odd years. And even if Mahomes is incredible playing that long, like the toll that takes on you physically and mentally has to be like something few men on earth can endure.
Mm-hmm. He needed that head-to-head one against Brady if he was going to ever.
That's what I'm going to.
Yeah. Sorry, Denny, to take your point. Yeah.
No. I was sad when Mahomes lost that game because I, you know, you just knew in that moment that in the popular in the culture in football culture in the wider culture, that was it. That was ball game as to the Brady versus Mahomes record. I think even if Mahomes breaks every single record that Brady holds and say equals his Super Bowls, I still think people would say Brady's better. He beat him head to head.
He did beat him head to head, and he beat him head to head in his prime and most haunting sports counterfactual, save perhaps for Novak Djokovic beating Roger Federer in the 2019 Wimbledon final. If you guys don't know, Roger had like 3 or 4 match points. Look it up.
Painful.
Very, very painful. But yeah, I mean, Brady, just this being Tom Brady, being like a football psychopath, he seems unfortunately quite pleasant off the field these days. Like he just left no stone unturned where he became unassailable with the Super Bowl argument. He became unassailable like in the personal statistics department, basically. I mean, that was what playing what till 45 was all about. Was I think trying to put that out of reach. He knows it's going to be very hard to put that out of reach since he played in an era where Peyton Manning and Drew Brees were always within reach and like ahead of him for stretches, but yeah, there's just no, you can't, it's such a weird thing because there were players in Brady's prime who had higher peaks. I think at his very best, Peyton Manning was a lot better than Tom Brady. And just at least statistically in terms of like football roboticism, mm-hmm. I mean, Aaron Rodgers had a higher peak too. I mean,
yes,
before Patrick Mahomes, there was Aaron Rodgers. This is something the Zoomers won't really know, like the way Aaron Rodgers was perceived, but
right.
He was the most physically gifted quarterback basically anyone had ever seen.
I was sure. I was as sure that Rodgers was going to be the greatest of all time as I am today of Mahomes. So, you know, maybe take that with a grain of salt, I guess. No,
Mahomes, of course, has already made many more Super Bowls than Aaron Rodgers, who would have recommended making more than one Super Bowl.
Put simply, Rodgers plays in Green Bay and it's too cold in Green Bay.
It did screw him. It's pretty cold in Kansas City. I mean,
like you've said, Pat, it neutralizes. It has neutralized the Packers' offensive advantage over the years.
It's true. They would have easily at least one more Super Bowl if they played in a dome. And unlike you, I don't think they should play in a dome. I do think Lambeau Field is a beautiful cathedral and one of the most special places in American sports. But yeah, my argument year after year is, there's just no home field advantage when it's that cold and you make the game a coin flip, and they lost a stunning amount of those coin flips. And yeah,
that's horrible. Take a picture of Lambeau Field, put it on the blockchain, turn it into an NFT, and then build a large cement structure. It was
so bad that he froze, Denny.
Look, you can still call it like, you know, you build a dome in Green Bay, nice comfy dome, 72 degrees all the time. And it can be called, you know, FTX Field at Lambeau or something, you know? Oh, is Pat frozen?
He's frozen. I think he tried to blame it on me. Can you? You can see me, and I can see you. He's out.
I thought he was just being very, very quiet for a minute. No, we have lost Pat. We're hoping to get him back in a moment here.
To take listeners behind the curtain, when he said my take was so bad that I froze, I stopped talking. I stopped my point. I literally had a joke about putting, mine was going to be a juice bar as the sponsor of the stadium. I had a bad stadium sponsor joke queued up before I was worried I froze and let it go. So I'm glad like you picked up that pitch as if it wasn't Travis Kelce throwing that horrible pitch to who got that one? Was it Jarek?
Yes, I think it was. I think it was.
I think it was Jarek. He loves that stuff too. I know they were talking about on the Kelce pod that sometime earlier in the year, like week 16, 17, he clearly is holding it like a bread loaf, looking around to do the pitch again. Give it to us for real in the Super Bowl. That'd be great.
I don't know why the pitch is so difficult for Travis Kelce. It was a very straightforward pitch. Like the guy's coming and,
It looked like it set up well. The play design happened. It looked like about as well as expected.
And there was nobody between him and McKinnon, you know, it's not like somebody jumped in and made Kelce hesitate or something. It was a beautiful play design. And I love that Andy Reid is so bored with regular plays that he will script, but you know, that was part of their like the 15 play script, you know, he will script a play as wild and zany and unnecessary as that. I mean, there's no reason for that, but when you have that much talent on offense and when you have Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, you might as well get crazy. It's the same thing with the circle, the little
ring around the rosie, is that what it's called?
What'd you say?
Ring around the rosy, is that maybe what it was called or whatever? Everyone knows the play you're talking about, the huddle spin into, like, I think it was like Wildcat Shenanigans or whatever.
I love that. I love it. Yeah, it worked.
If Andy Reid was bored a week ago when his, you know, or whatever that was it last week, 2 weeks ago, at least at that point in the game, he had some healthy receivers, he's going to be wildly entertained trying to figure out how to utilize Marcus Kemp, Amir Smith-Marset.
That's right.
John Ross, I think, is on their practice squad. Luckily, they were relatively optimistic that we'll get, I think it was Tony and Juju. They're less so optimistic about Mecole, I think. Well, until we get Rotopat, back, yeah. We can, Hardman's, is he officially ruled out already?
I think I saw a report. He said they're not expecting him to play.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure if it was official or not, but that is as ironclad as it gets. Coaches love to be optimistic, and when they're not, it is a dangerous situation. Until we get Rotopat back, we can just hop into the show. Rotopat, I don't know. He released his season in review article in which he gives, as he mentioned, about a paragraph summarizing what happened last year for every team and a little bit of what we can expect from them next year. And we wanted to give some sort of, I'll call them superlatives, right? Like most likely to X, the best, yada, yada. And for the start of the superlatives, this is like, I think almost the most obvious superlative we have is the 2023 Lions. Who is the next, I don't want to say worst to first team, because they weren't first in their division. They didn't make the playoffs. But their turnaround was truly monumental, both in terms of the on-field product we got, but also in terms of the fantasy production and the cultural shift. Like, I really think as of 3 years ago, they seemed like as a franchise, they were just spinning the rudders, going nowhere. And now, like, I don't know how good they'll be in 2023. Like, if they don't improve their defense, if Jameson Williams still isn't getting fully up to speed yet, they could be the same team, right? Like, it could be possible that they don't make the playoffs again. But they do seem like a team most set on the path to success of, you know, you say the teams that didn't make the playoffs. But I want to talk about it from a fantasy perspective, because they were also a team that was incredibly fun to play for fantasy purposes. And they could, I mean, they really should be more fun, because I think we'll get a really full slate of Jameson Williams in 2023. So what is a team that as of this year, we really weren't targeting in fantasy? And in 2023, the whole team, because that's really what was so much fun about the Lions, is like, as much as we hated Swift's usage, he was great when he touched the ball. Jamal Williams, what did he score, 14 touchdowns?
Yeah.
Insane. 14. Yeah. That's crazy. That is LeGarrette Blount stuff. That is truly an homage to the OG touchdown score for Zoomers. It's like when we all got into fantasy football in fifth grade. It was LeGarrette Blount.
Went crazy.
Yeah, that was wild. And the receivers. So who is a team where you think the whole tide could rise, the whole boat, per se, for the fantasy outlook?
Just real quick on Jamal Williams. Every time I watched football with my dad this year, we would see on Red Zone Jamal Williams score, and he would go, "You have that guy?" And I go, "No, Dad.
No,
you don't understand regression, okay?" And he would say, I don't know anything about regression or analytics. All I know is that every time I watch football, Jamal Williams scores a touchdown. Why don't you play him once in a while? And I said, God, Dad, you don't understand.
The process.
Yeah, right. We have to torture ourselves with overthinking. Okay. You can't just watch a guy score over and over and over again and then say, oh, I'm going to play that guy. We're not idiots. I like the Panthers. I like the Panthers to be this team that emerges because I do trust Frank Reich as a guy who will do what it takes to score points. I do think that he is a at least somewhat forward looking guy, despite the Colts offensive disaster the past couple of years. I don't think that that can be hung completely on him. I also think that there are some good pieces in this Carolina offense, not the least of which is DJ Moore. DJ Moore, I know for fantasy purposes, was a total catastrophe for folks who thought that they were getting a steal at his whatever fourth round, fifth round ADP. Didn't work out, but his yards per route run when he was, when they had decent quarterback play was hopeful, bordering on making me a DJ Moore truther in that, he was able to succeed with horrible quarterback play for most of the year. So I do think that this team, whoever is in the backfield, whether it's Hubbard, whether it's Foreman, I think that they would be interesting. I even think someone like Tommy Tremble, okay, who was running a lot of routes late in the season, could eventually be interesting. Of course, the key is, as Kyle, is the Panthers need a quarterback. So I don't know where that's going to come from, but we'll see.
I believe they picked 10 or 9. They either picked 10 or 9. I'm working on off-season stuff. I'm incredibly behind, and the off-season hasn't started yet, which feels great. It's really just a humbling feeling to be behind before it even starts. Yeah. But they picked 9 or 10, and this looks like I'll call it a deep quarterback class in that there are a lot of first-round and even top 15 candidates. They're not, obviously, unless they trade up. They could trade up, though, getting a top 2 candidate almost certainly. But I mean, really, Sam Darnold played well in, if you're listening, I'm putting this in air quotes, down the stretch. But I do think his, limited-ish skill set was maximized in a way that you don't want to. You hamstring your off efforts to hide and help your quarterback. If you can unleash the quarterback position from those shackles, even if it's with a rookie who still, won't be elite in year one, but could be better and less limited. And that's their best quarterback last year was still limited and hidden. Their worst quarterbacks were far worse than Darnold. So I think a reasonable upgrade in quarterback play could be a lot for this team. And like you said, I know Reich got fired from Indy, but to me that was much more based on the front office interpersonal stuff where he benched Matt Ryan, who was by most accounts a bottom 2 or 3 quarterback, and that's what seemed to set Jim Irsay off. Really, the only issue I've considerably had with Reich is that I'm going to give him some blame for the team he was on continually taking these hand-me-down quarterbacks. He was probably involved in that somehow.
Sure.
If they can just get that one thing right, though, he was really smart. He adapted to the talent he had on his team. Whenever he had Rivers, who was solid, and Luck, who was really good, his teams were pass first and they were strong passing attacks. And then he leaned into Jonathan Taylor when that was more practical to do so, when he had Wentz. So yeah. I will give him the benefit of the doubt and say I thought he was a pretty good offensive mind.
Sure. I do, too. Producer Adam says that the Panthers pick in round one, they have the ninth overall pick. Round two, 39th overall, then the 60th overall, then the 92nd overall. I think that we could see David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, is as thirsty as anyone on earth for a franchise quarterback. I would not be stunned if there was a package deal here to convert this draft capital into a high pick. I don't know how high exactly, if they're going to try to leapfrog some other quarterback desperate teams in the top 10, we'll see, but it wouldn't shock me at all. Also, a fallback option here, honestly, just thinking about available free agents, Geno Smith would be a huge upgrade over these guys. And with the Seahawks having significant draft capital, They could be done with Geno, and Geno played well enough this year. I mean, he led the league in completion rate over expected, you know. I think that he should get a job next year, even a short-term thing, and Carolina would fit. And he's not, I really don't think that he fits the mold of what Reich was working with like Wentz being cast off and Ryan being cast off and like just taking other teams' scraps. I think Geno is better than that. So hopefully the Panthers can get that together. Do you have a team, Kyle, that fits this mold? Somebody who could emerge as a somewhat fun fantasy team?
Yeah, I have the Jets. To me, it's sort of what you were talking about in that and you mentioned coaching change as well, but quarterback play and just the turnaround from a little below average, which is probably what I'd call Sam Darnold in terms of his abilities. He actually graded well in EPA per play up until the last few games, in which he wasn't as strong. But quarterback play that was mixed to horrible, which is what you would call the Jets. At least it's what I'd call the Jets. And I like Mike White. Like he's fun. They play better football, both from a fantasy and real life perspective, when he is under center. But at the end of the day, he plays like a backup. He was 30th. In EPA per play, and he was significantly better than Zach Wilson, who was 38th. And for the few reps we saw Joe Flacco, 39th. They had probably one of the bottom three or four tandems of quarterbacks, and that includes what we felt like was the good Mike White stuff. But for the most part, Mike White was a reprieve from the horrible. And I think they're a team that's a strong contender to land at least a Derek Carr, if not an Aaron Rodgers, who Aaron Rodgers physically still had it last year, this past season. To me, it just looked like at times he was checked out. He didn't trust his receivers, and his receivers were spotty to bad. I think it's fair to call them. I think he'll have – I'm pretty confident he'll have a strong receiving core when he goes to the Jets. ACL tears aren't what they used to be. I think Breece Hall should come back. Not really any issues, and he was running at an elite level to start the year. And he has the chops to be a three-down back. So I think this is a team that when you replace – well below average in aggregate quarterback play with even just average. Like I think Carr is like an average to top 15, like slightly above average guy. Even that leap, just based on the extra drive length you get, the extra efficiency per play would be really inspiring for the whole offense, specifically the passing attack.
Yeah.
But potentially the move to Rodgers, I think at least for a year or two, it's not a long-term solution probably, but would be pretty incredible for this team. And I think the Nathaniel Hackett signing on the one hand doesn't seem great. I would not have done it. Last time I was on here, I said like it could be worse in theory. Like I think maybe some of the things that plagued the Broncos under Hackett were more structural head coaching things and less based on offensive scheme. I still think the scheme wasn't great, but it seemed to me, as it probably was in Denver, an effort to lure Rodgers there. And this time it probably has a better chance of working. So I think this is a team that is set up to be infused by great quarterback play, and they might get it. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, they don't need great quarterback plays.
It's not bad.
Yeah, that's the best thing about the Jets is that I think that they're structured in a way that they just need passable quarterback play, and I think that's what Derek Carr can deliver for you. I actually think Derek Carr is a pretty good fit and doesn't come with the potential tumult that that Aaron Rodgers would bring. I told Pat on Monday's show, the thought of Aaron Rodgers having to answer to New York media is probably the stuff of nightmares for Robert Saleh, if that is really something that's being considered in the Jets facility. I know folks, look, I know I'm not breaking any news. Kyle's not breaking any news by saying the Jets were bad at quarterback in 2022. And you all know it. You saw it. Okay. You watched the film, you grinded the tape, and you saw it yourselves. But I just want to give you maybe a better understanding, a better statistical grasp of how bad it was. Okay. So adjusted EPA per play for quarterbacks is a really good measure of how, you know, efficient these guys were. So I ran a query, 150 plays, or more this year. And that grouped in all three Jets quarterbacks. So you have, Joe Flacco, 39th among all quarterbacks in adjusted EPA per play. Zach Wilson, just behind him at 38th in adjusted EPA, and then Mike White at 33rd. I mean, the other guys sprinkled in this area: Carson Wentz, Baker Mayfield, Colt McCoy, Deshaun Watson, which is something. So it really, really horrific play. Elijah Moore, Garrett Wilson, I'm trying to, Breece Hall, Michael Carter to an extent. I get that Michael Carter's not fantastic.
Sure.
But I think that they, and a pretty decent offensive line when they're healthy, I think that they have what it would take to be a playoff team, easily a playoff team, with Derek Carr, which is saying something.
Speaking of playoff teams, we talked about it from a fantasy angle that I think the Jets like really could just be a load of receiver talent with a good quarterback and an offensive line that they've worked to improve over recent years through the draft and free agent signings to being a really fun fantasy team. But introducing back into the show RotoPat with potential teams that more from a real life perspective, that's kind of where I think the Lions are headed. That sure, I think the Lions are a fun offense, but they also have like the structural integrity of a team that can keep progressing and from a real life NFL perspective, be a playoff caliber team, not just next year, but for years to come. So, Pat, any closing thoughts on that great conversation we just had?
Yeah, which one are we on?
We were just wrapping up more of a fantasy rising tide as opposed to a playoff, non-playoff to playoff jump. I think on the list you had an interesting team.
Well, Sav, you said the single grossest one by far so far, the Atlanta Falcons.
Yes.
That's yours. I'm not. No,
kind of contingent on getting a quarterback. There was just a report on Thursday from The Athletic with the obvious that they're probably going to get rid of Marcus Mariota, $12 million cap savings if they cut him loose. Desmond Ridder did not look like the answer down the stretch, but they have another blue chip draft pick that could be a landing spot even for like a Derek Carr type. And if they just get vaguely better quarterback play, I mean, Tyler Algier was one of the most efficient running backs in the NFL as a rookie. And kind of surprisingly explosive. Of course, Drake London, who flashed early, then did nothing for weeks, months actually, and then came on late again when they basically went to anyone other than Marcus Mariota. Even though Desmond Ridder is bad, it was still enough to spark Drake London, just it being anyone other than Marcus Mariota. And of course, Mr. Kyle Pitts. And like to have three kind of like great fantasy building blocks there. It is an offense that, like, was one of the least valuable in fantasy in 2022 that could become a shocker in 2020. I take no pleasure in reporting this. I should have left this to Denny to talk up the Falcons.
But I never take any pleasure in reporting anything. So.
I could see this, though, because I actually think there are some, like, strategic things. Like, I think the run rate from this team was bad, but they were also, I think, perfectly even. They were almost dead even in rush EPA and pass EPA. Like, at that point, I still think you probably want to hedge toward what we know in the aggregate is more efficient. But like, if they are equal, I'm not as concerned with you as I am with teams that have strong quarterback play that don't want to throw the football as much. And they did have all three of their running backs, Tyler Algier, obviously, but then Cordarrelle Patterson, and even all the way down to Caleb Huntley, were all above average in rush yards over expected per attempt. Yeah. Like, this was clearly, I think Algier was the most talented, and he finished first among them, so that kind of checks out. But it was also a schematic thing. And they were also a team that faced a lot of heavy boxes, setting them up well for play action, which they ran at one of the highest rates. It's just you don't end up using play action in a total kind of way that much because you just didn't pass very much. But if they were willing to lean into getting a good quarterback, like balance out towards the pass a little more, mm-hmm. I think it's probably still fine if they run the ball somewhat because they're good at it.
They're one of only five teams to have positive run game EPA in 2022.
Yeah, that's why it's not like
you could say it came at the expense, though, of the passing game. So.
Yeah, a little bit. But I understand why they were trying to hide their quarterbacks. And to me, it really relies on how flexible Arthur Smith is with assuming he gets a good quarterback. If he is still dogmatic about the run game, then that becomes a problem. But I'm not going to just say he is 100% a run first, like he will refuse to pass the football, because he also did smart stuff when he passed. He did play action a ton. He was passing against heavier boxes, giving him more one-on-one matchups. So I could see this team really making a shift, not being pass heavy like our Chiefs, our Bills, but if they just pass smartly and pass more, even with, let's just say, it's a rookie quarterback, I think they could be a team, like RotoPat said, that is sneaky fun for fantasy, as much as I think all of us would kind of hate to admit after what we saw last year with all of our three four turn Kyle Pitts teams.
A 3-4 turn. Where were you drafting? I'm seeing him going to the second round.
There's a few times where I recognized, you know, CD Carter 13 in the lobby, and I was like, I'm at the 107, but who knows if he makes it back.
Oh, I was not a Pitts guy, and I was roundly mocked for it. But
I hope you like staying poor, Denny.
Yeah, I do. Well,
no. You know, that must be the Kyle Pitts.
I have to say that Arthur Smith has a chance with a better quarterback to make this Falcons offense like his Titans offense was at the, and I know this is going to be a funny phrase, and please stick with me here for a second, but at the peak of Ryan Tannehill's powers, okay?
People forget Ryan Tannehill is like one of the best. He was like, I think he led the league in yards per attempt in his first season with the Titans. He was one of the best quarterbacks in EPA per play. Like, he was legit good he was legit good on paper, and it produced great production from someone like A.J. Brown. Even if it was spiky because the pie was small, they were in a really efficient passing attack. And I totally agree. That could happen. Yeah.
So in that model, so if we're thinking the history is going to repeat itself, or at least looks similar in Atlanta as it did in Tennessee with Arthur Smith, I think Tyler Allgeier is Arthur Smith's Derrick Henry. Ooh. And I don't mean that he's a generational talent. I don't think so. But
it's too late.
But wait a second. Tyler Allgeier, per the numbers, and I'm talking about all the peripheral stuff, was incredibly impressive as a rusher, even as a pass catcher to an extent. Kyle already ran down all the reasons why, and Pat mentioned that the Falcons were one of only five teams with a positive rush EPA. But Allgeier, when he got a bigger workload late in the season after the Caleb Huntley injury, and after they had sort of phased out Cordarrelle Patterson a little bit in that rushing attack, I think he showed that he can be like a foundational piece in the short term for this Arthur Smith offense. I'm very excited about Allgeier for next year.
Should I regret putting the Falcons on the show sheet? Or so we did just get a Tyler Allgeier, Derrick Henry.
I think the Falcons are probably going to stink, but I like Allgeier.
And look, Kyle Pitts could be his Chigakonkwo, or the, you know, as you boomers remember, Jonu Smith.
No, oh my gosh. The silent generation remembers Delanie Walker.
That's true.
Yeah. A zoomer has never, ever, ever heard of Delanie Walker.
Oh my
Walker.
Gosh. Yeah. Yeah. My grandfather drafted Delanie Walker.
Right. He got back from the service and drafted Delanie back from Korea and drafted Delanie Walker.
Yeah.
So that's just what you did back in those days, Denny. You know, just what you do right now is take a short break.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Live coverage from the Super Bowl in Arizona all next week on Peacock. Our daily lineup is the Dan Patrick Show at 9 a.m., followed by the Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry at noon, then Pro Football Talk Live at 1, Brother from Another at 3, all times Eastern. We don't recognize the Pacific time zone. And if you don't catch it on video, you can always check out the audio version wherever you download and subscribe to your podcasts. Denny, I just read that promo, and it doesn't even include Denny Carter and Lawrence Jackson in Glendale, Arizona for Super Bowl LV2. You guys are going to be out there all week churning out amazing content for the Roto-World Football Show and for our social media feeds. So
we will be producing a lot of content for folks. Also, I will be proving that I am actually at the Super Bowl, which people did not
know. Well, it's funny you say that, because guess who's going to be spending the entire week proving you're not there?
The lawyer.
It's going to be because also I have nothing better to do since I cannot go, since I am welcoming yet another child. into this glorious world, Denny. But I'm going to dedicate my week to proving you are not there, because you will not be there, even though I just said you will be.
I am going to once and for all disprove the haters and say that I am at the Super Bowl. Let's
see. Do we have any? We gotta have like pictures. We gotta have pictures of just like us when we met up for the Fantasy Expo in August. We should just post those and be like, so happy to meet Denny in Maryland yesterday, last night, holding a, you know, crop in a newspaper like I'm holding up a date newspaper.
It's a soundstage in Arlington, Virginia, if people really need to. But yeah. And maybe involved with the CIA too. We can't really get into any of that. But
no, we can't.
Soundstage in Arlington, Virginia. So I don't even know what you guys talked about, but I'm assuming you have not talked about the team that did not make the playoffs in 2022 that you consider most likely to make the playoffs in 2023. And it can be an obvious answer. There's some pretty obvious answers here. But Denny Carter, who do you think is a playoff team most likely to make the playoffs in 2023 who is not in the field this season?
I know the haters are going to really get on me for this one.
You just took like a very long pause and sigh. I don't know if you even want to say
it. I don't want to say it. But
say the Houston Texans. Just say it.
Patriots. Because things could not be worse for their offense this year, and they made a playoff run. Like, they were in it until the end. I take no pleasure, honestly. I'm actually sick over it. But if you know, Bill O'Brien, he is what he is. Like, I don't think he's going to reinvent the wheel or anything in New England, but he hashtag.
He's going to make the wheel a circle again. Last year, they were driving with square wheels out there.
here's what I know the Patriots can do with Bill O'Brien calling plays and heading the offense. They can get the play in on time, okay, which is something they could not do under Matt Patricia, okay. So I would say the Patriots are would be my pick. I know it's uninspiring, but that's what I went with.
Well, yeah, I mean they quite literally could not have done things worse for themselves in offense last year, and sometimes that logic can kind of be faulty. Like, hey, guess what? Since they're not going to be rock bottom anymore, they're going to be better. It doesn't always work that way. But I mean, truly, they tied one hand behind their back and went 8-9 and were a week 18 win away from making
it's
the
actually amazing that they didn't end up a 4-win team this year because of the way their offense operated.
So yeah, the Patriots stuck out to me. Another team in that division stuck out to me, the New York Jets. And so when I wanted to talk about them, I was starting to think, were we overrating the 2022 New York Jets? Because they got a lot of interesting pieces. The defense arrived, some pretty cool skill core pieces, but the offensive line still fairly shaky. I mean, Breece Hall was their best player in offense. Now he's coming back from a torn up knee. They, of course, don't have quarterback answered. Are the Jets, are they one player away? Are they just like a legitimate quarterback away, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, we talked about them as like a fantasy team to be interesting to target. But I mean, that was kind of the consensus, I think, from both Denny and I. We talked about the acquisition of Nathaniel Hackett. It's a bit strange, to say the least. We talked about it last week, so we don't have to rehash it. But I think, one, maybe it signals that they're trying to lure Aaron Rodgers to the AFC and play for the Jets. But more importantly, as we rattled off, they had their best quarterback was 30th in EPA per play, 33rd in adjusted EPA per play. They had, like you said, they had talent on defense. They seem to, and the reason I think we say Breece Hall maybe was their best talent on offense is because it's hard to display your talent through the passing game when Zach Wilson is just out there throwing interceptions every third play. So to me, I think we could really realize how incredible, you know, someone even as deep on the roster as like, Elijah Moore, or more importantly, Garrett Wilson could be a superstar with a real quarterback. Yes. So I do kind of think they're a quarterback away. I know it's a simplistic view, but they have a lot of talent elsewhere, and it's young talent too.
It's also a defense, and I'm going to tell you about the Jets' Pro Football Focus grades this year real quick, because it's a defense that is so good that the offense just has to be functional. Like, it doesn't the offense doesn't have to go out and put up 25, 30 points a game. I don't even think that that's what they're going for, honestly, after how bad last season was. But as a coverage unit, the Jets were graded as the second best in the league behind only the Broncos by Pro Football Focus. Pass rush, they were third. Run defense, they were sixth. Total defense, they were first, just edging out the 49ers. So, that matters. Like, that matters a lot, the ability to shut down other teams and to take pressure off of whoever is under center for them. I mean, their quarterback, we talked about it, Pat, while you were away for a moment. With the quarterback situation.
Real quick, just to take people out, Denny's lawyers. I was dragged away for 20 minutes.
They knocked on your door like Patrick Reed's lawyers knocked on Roy McIlroy's door.
I'm not used to the no knock. And thankfully, my legal team is very good.
I was going to say, there's a bunch of like bloody ties and like lapels and stuff laying around your room right now. I won't ask what happened, but I'm just glad you're back.
So I'm back, and I really, really don't know why I interrupted Denny in the middle
of his train of thought. All I'm saying is that their quarterback situation could not have been worse, talking about the Jets. If they could upgrade slightly, they are a playoff team.
So, okay, I'm glad you kind of – because that feels right. Like, when you're just scanning through the standings, they really did feel like a team that was one player short in 22. And, you know, that's the thing. It was probably true for 2022. Like, if they had just Derek Carr, they would have won 10 or 11 games.
Yes.
But they do have other issues, and the issues could be bigger in 2023. That's why I guess maybe I kind of like was like, are they actually one player away? Because they were one player away in 2022. But maybe there were just other issues they had that didn't come to the surface. Like, the offensive line is a fairly big issue for the Mekhi Becton looked like he was going to be like one of the best left tackles in the NFL for 8 to 10 years. And now his career is like just totally at a crossroads.
Yeah.
So there's strange things to the line. The Breece Hall injury is a really, really big deal for them. Like, not good. But the defense does seem to have arrived, and they have a defensive-minded head coach. So I think Denny, his assessment is correct. If they just get even vaguely competent quarterback play, they're looking like a playoff team. Are the Lions just too obvious to mention?
I had him. It's worth mentioning. I had him on there because it's kind of a layup line one. I mean, I believe DJ Chark was only on a 1-year contract, but if you replace him with what Jameson Williams could be, that will be an upgrade, and it could be a massive upgrade. They've got offensive line squared away by a mile. They have one of the best offensive lines in the league. Running back, even, I know, I think Jamal Williams is also a free agent, but it does seem like his role is something that is a complement to the extremely efficient DeAndre Swift. And maybe if that role is minimized to give Swift a little bit more work, the loss of Jamal Williams isn't even as impactful as it could be because he'd score a bunch of touchdowns. Defense, obviously a major issue, one of the bottom teams in EPA per play, terrible against the pass, but they have 2 first-round picks, I believe 2 second-round picks as well. They can spend a lot of that and just fire on the defense, which already has some building block pieces. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson stepped in and looked like an immediate playmaker for this team. And he also is, you know, he's got to be like 23 years older, room to grow for him as well. So to me, I think the defense will maybe approach average, right? But if the offense can keep, even if they just take a small step forward with, you know, DeAndre Swift stays healthy and they get him the ball more James, I mean, any Jameson Williams, we didn't really see any of him, frankly, any amount of him getting involved, the offense could progress a little bit. The defense could take a massive step towards just being competent. And I mean, they were a tiebreaker away from making the playoffs. So it's an obvious one, but they're a fun team to talk about.
The only thing with the Lions is that I feel like it's not a guarantee. I think the offense could regress actually in 2023 because we basically got like, I feel like unsustainable production from Jared Goff. Like, I just don't
know. The thing is, like, it didn't seem like Jared Goff was doing anything. Like, it wasn't like, wow, Jared Goff's 9th deep ball, you know, in the past 2 weeks. Like, it wasn't like he was like getting lucky with doing things he's incapable of doing. He was just distributing at a very high level, you know, making good throws as well, but nothing that was like, this isn't sustainable for Goff. I do agree that like, it is just a little weird that it's some of the best Goff we've ever seen, but I think it is kind of sustainable.
And yeah, just even if they do regress on offense a little bit, it would be fine. Cause I do, they basically seem like the classic young team where the light bulb just came on midway through. They started the year 1-6. They closed on an 8-2 run. But it just seemed like they figured it out. And it's not surprising that they figured it out because, like I said in my seasons and review article, they have building blocks just basically in every position group, including the secondary, Kirby Joseph, Aiden Hutchinson, the offensive line, the skill core. And quarterback is still an issue, even though Jared Goff played shockingly well in 2023. Maybe retaining Ben Johnson. It's like the Lions are kind of too obvious, but they're too obvious for a reason. Like they are a playoff team as currently constructed.
You know, looking at Goff's career numbers, if you look at his adjusted yards per attempt. He averaged eight adjusted yards per attempt this season. That was way over his 6.6 from 2021, but it was not even close to his 8.6 during his prime with the Rams in 2017 and 2018. So I actually do think that what he did this year was at least somewhat sustainable. I think that there is a way to kind of coax him into good quarterback play. I think the Lions have found that formula.
Denny, how also, down
this bad. Is a division that could be losing Aaron Rodgers too, which would be huge. Like, imagine getting to play Jordan Love two times a year. Like, when Kirk Cousins is the top dog of your division, like, let me play in that one.
It's pretty nice. But Denny, how down bad are the analytics bros that Dan Campbell's a better offensive mind than Sean McVay? Will they ever?
Here's the thing. I don't know if we're down bad because we want Danny on our team. Like, we're asking him to come be our dad. Like
no, please. It's true.
Dan Campbell, but we need a big, strong, tough dude. High T dude.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So I'm not sad about it. Look, do I want Brandon Staley as the face of the analytics movement? Not really.
This is correct. This is the correct take.
Do I want a big strapping dude with a chest out to here and just like triceps that could like crush my skull? I want that guy. Give me that guy, because that guy can rope in the other tough guys who say, you got to take the points on 4th and inches from the 4-yard line. you just got to do it. But when the big man comes and says, no, we're going for it, they listen to him. I like Dan Campbell that way.
Kicking it up a notch, since the saying a team's going to go from the not making the playoffs to making the playoffs, that's not spicy enough. Which team do we think might be ready to break through to like a Final Four level? Like a team that wasn't in the conference championship round this year that could make the conference championship round in 2023. Who comes to mind for you guys as taking the next step, Kyle Dvorak?
I think the Jags are a team that all signs are pointing up. They had sort of a Lions-esque cultural change going from, I think, the worst coach ever. I think Urban Meyer is the worst NFL coach ever. Going to a former Super Bowl winning coach who, again, was not, I don't believe, was fired for bad coaching in Philadelphia. It was for a complete misalignment with his front office. And he proved that if he is aligned with his front office, as he was seemingly with the Jaguars, that he can get the job done on the field. Trevor Lawrence looked like a true number one overall bust in his first year, and then immediately looked like what we expect from a number one overall pick in his second year, and his first with a coach who knows anything about what he is doing. So to me, the trajectory is great. They will add Calvin Ridley to a receiving room that I think is fine. They're passable, but they really do lack a true number one. There's no guarantee that Calvin Ridley comes back after his time off and is that player, but there's the potential for him to be that. And that, combined with what Trevor Lawrence offers, I think is really enticing for them to be maybe not Chiefs Bills level, but I would say at least Bengals. And the Bengals beat the Bills, so hell, they could be Chiefs Bengals Bills level.
Jaguars are a really good choice. What do you think, Denny?
We're going to stay in Florida, folks. We're going to stay in Florida. I'm going to say the Dolphins.
That was my choice, too. I can't believe someone else saying the Dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, look, they were 7th in offensive EPA per play, and that was with Tua missing huge chunks of time. Of course, the offense doesn't really click without him. Maybe Mike McDaniel might want to go out and get a slightly better backup option for next season, instead of having to fall back on Teddy Bridgewater.
Well, it's weird. They thought they had done that with Teddy, but
as
we talked about, Teddy's at the stage where he just can't stay healthy.
No, he can't. He can't. And you just have to accept that. And I know the injury prone deniers out there will be furious with this, but come on with Teddy Bridgewater.
It's not even him. It's just aging. Like he was always a smaller guy, and a guy, a smaller quarterback over the age of 30, does not age well.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at the first half of the season, you had a Dolphins offense that was like basically like playing a video game. I think that's the way Tyreek Hill described it. They were 4th only behind the Bills, Chiefs, and Eagles in offensive EPA per play. I think Mike McDaniel's an incredibly sharp guy and play caller. Who is going to spend this offseason like looking for more edges, like looking for more ways to be able to move the ball effectively without a generational talent throwing the ball? Because I mean, obviously, I know Tua exited finally the concussion protocol this week, which is great news. Apparently, he's going to keep playing. he's going to be the starter next year, and barring some sort of setback this offseason. So they're going to have to figure out ways to get by with him at quarterback. I don't say that as a huge slight to him, but come on. I mean, Tua, we've seen Tua's ceiling, and it's not elite. It's not elite. And that's okay.
I think the way to put it is that teams without Mahomes have to do a lot to get quarterback play right. That even like approaches like the tier below Mahomes, right? Because like that's the arms race we're in, right? Is that we talked about at the beginning of the show with the Brady stuff that like playing in the AFC is not easy. So and they did that though. They bridged the gap for, you know, 10 or 12 weeks or whatever it was, and they could do it again. I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean the Dolphins have a middling defense for the most part, good run defense. So I do think that they are a team that should be able to make the jump if Tua can play most or all of next season.
Well, and a big reason they can make the jump now is they did have a middling defense, and they've added one of the only, I would say, three or four defensive coordinators who makes like an active difference. I mean, the number's higher than that. There are more than three or four good defensive coordinators, but Vic Fangio is someone who comes in and immediately makes you like a top-tier defense. Even like the whole time I was with the Broncos, like they had pretty good personnel. But it wasn't like elite personnel, and it was good, but he made that defense punch above its weight. I mean, the 2018 Chicago Bears defense was historically good. He was always great with the 49ers. Like Vic Fangio is like a real big deal addition to the Dolphins. And with Mike McDaniel and Fangio together, like they've got the scheme covered. Now they can kind of focus on trying to put the finishing touches in the rod. I mean, the offensive line is still a mammoth issue for the Dolphins. So that is one issue with the Dolphins, is that there's no one area where they can't be like the Bengals were like last year. Like, we just got to add five offensive linemen and then we're good. Like, they have a few spots like that where they need to add talent. Yeah. But like the coaching brain power, the skill player upside, the Dolphins are quite close.
Yeah, you have the Dolphins graded by Pro Football Focus as the second worst pass blocking team. Only the Titans were worse last year.
It's hard to believe there's someone worse. And it's funny you mentioned the Titans. I would say if there's a team who didn't make the playoffs, who maybe is most likely to make like the championship game level jump, Kyle is laughing. It probably is the Titans. I mean, talk about a season that just went totally sideways. And
I have bad news. I was laughing for a different reason.
Okay. No, you don't think the Titans can make the jump?
You have on the show sheet later, which is what I was thinking about, is long shots to get the number one overall pick.
Oh, wow.
So we'll be at odds here. I'll just say
that the Titans, they're now in a half decade of every single year overachieving with Mike Vrabel. They were 7-3 before Ryan Tannehill got injured. Every year we think they can't keep getting away with it, and they make an AFC championship game one year. They get the number one seed 2 years later. I do think they've got the coaching thing just like down cold, basically. Like, it's weird too, because they've never had like the defensive personnel that it's like truly elite. They have some pretty good players, but like it's been so much about coaching with time. And maybe the roster isn't good enough. Maybe the coaching is lead and the roster just isn't good enough. They did fire GM John Robinson for a reason, but I just wouldn't be shocked at all to see the Titans back in like 11 to 12 win range. And we're all just like, why? Because they don't score points, and it's annoying when a team with Ryan Tannehill is good. But we'll get the negative case though from Kyle a little later in the show. So Jags Dolphins though, I think those make sense as the two most obvious candidates. I think it makes sense to take a short break. Every season is draft season. Get your Roto-World draft guide bundle today and dominate your football, baseball, and basketball drafts. They're packed with profiles, rankings, projections. Order today and get all three Roto-World draft guides for the price of two. Use the promo code BUNDLE5, BUNDLE5, and save an extra $5 at checkout. And don't forget, download the Roto-World app to receive breaking player news all off-season long. Stay ahead of the competition by favoriting players. Get the latest injury updates, player news, and much more delivered right to your phone. It is available in your app store today.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
We spent way too long being positive. We need to go negative finally.
Yes,
who is a divisional round participant from this year's final eight playoff teams most likely to miss the playoffs next year? We have some obvious ones here too. We can go obvious. Danny, who from the final eight this year is most likely to miss the playoffs in 2023?
So the final eight would have been you said divisional.
Anyone who made the divisional round.
Right. Yeah, there are some obvious ones. I actually would say the Jaguars. I know that sounds maybe a little funny, but I think that they were really bad this year until they were good. And Maybe they figured something out here with how to best use Trevor Lawrence. I think that if that division is any better in this coming year, and that division was down bad this year. I mean, the only reason they made the playoffs is because the Titans completely collapsed, and because of the Tannehill injury, they didn't really have anybody behind him. Anyway, you all know the story. I don't think the Jaguars are nearly as good as they appeared late in the season.
That's an interesting choice. And the Jags had a crazy year where, like, I think they started out like 3-6. Or let me, I'm going to my.
Yeah, I mean, people were writing eulogies for their season.
They were. I'm going. So they started off 3-7, but then they adjusted. They closed really hot, but they did go down 27-0 in the wild card. I agree that. They're maybe one of those teams who arrived like a year early. It's a kind of common trope in sports. Like a team will arrive a year early, like make a surprise playoff run. They get anointed for the following year, and then they miss the playoffs. And everyone's like, wow, what happened? Mm-hmm, and it turns out it's not so much that they're regressing or getting worse. It's just that they overachieved one year and were ahead of schedule. And I could definitely see that being the case with the Jaguars, Denny.
I think they overachieved big time, yeah.
Talking about a team that overachieved is the New York Giants. And – I mean, they finished the year, I think, on a 3-6-1 bender. Don't have an answer to quarterback. Saquon Barkley is a free agent. They don't have any wide receivers. They've got a pretty good defense. Like another team where, so like if they miss the playoffs next year, I'm like, oh man, they took a step back. Like they're getting worse. Like I thought Brian Daboll was supposed to be amazing. And they could have a bad year next year, and it wouldn't mean any of that. It would just mean that it's a roster that's like not ready yet. And one that overachieved greatly in 2022 because it did. I mean, you are grossly overachieving if you make the playoffs with Richie James, Isaiah Hodgins, and Darius Slayton as your receiver trio. And then, of course, I mean, obviously, then it doesn't matter who the team is. Of course, you're going to blow out the Vikings in the wild card round.
Of course.
it's like, that's fine. But I think the Giants, even more than the Jags, arrived a year early. And like, so now the expectations are going to be like sky high in New York next year. And I just wouldn't be surprised if they take a fairly sizable step back. And it's not necessarily because anyone did anything wrong, but that they just aren't actually that good yet and need more time for the Daboll program to take effect. Kyle, do you have any concurrences, any new blood to inject into
this?
Yeah,
I just get the Giants. Like that felt like such an obvious one. And I like the Jags. I think especially with quarterback play, like that's kind of the one edge I see them as having over, really a team like the Giants, in which like the Giants maybe have the edge in coaching. Daboll really seems to have a lot of stuff figured out. I think Peterson is a very good coach. Daboll could be one of the better coaches. So I think the one differentiator between them is that they have room to grow in terms of quarterback play to a top five, top four type of spot, given what Trevor Lawrence's projection coming into the NFL was, and then what he did in his second year, not his first year. Forget about that stuff. I think it's fair to kind of forget about it to some extent. So I think they have room to grow in that respect, whereas I'm not sure how much the Giants have. And I think kind of the general public would agree that like Daniel Jones played really well this past season, but he played in a way that I'm not sure that finds ceiling. And maybe it's the receivers. Maybe you just give him one good receiver and he finds a ceiling we haven't seen. I'm skeptical of that, though. I think they honestly played in a way that makes sense for both the receivers they had, but also the limitations Daniel Jones has shown. I wanted to go a little spicier just for, not to pick the obvious one, especially since I was talking about the Lions as a team that could make the playoffs. They nearly made the playoffs. It was a tiebreaker thing or whatever. So I will go with the Cowboys. The Cowboys, they're really good this past year and sort of underrated, but they also did some stuff that I really, especially on defense, don't know how sustainable it is. They were second in EPA per play, but without turnovers, they were seventh. That's obviously something that's not that sticky year to year. I think they're a team that should probably produce more turnovers than the average team, but that's a significant jump. They were also, I think, 14th in success rate against the pass, but second in EPA per play against the pass. Getting a ton of sacks, they finished third in sacks. They finished first in forced fumbles and fumble recoveries. They were tied in fumble recovery touchdowns for first in the NFL, seventh in interceptions. They should be an above average team by all these measures, but should they be a clean sweep top five in almost every one of these unsticky measures year to year? Probably not. And then on the other side of the ball, their flaws were very easily exposed. I think they can address them, but we knew
that they did. They made a brilliant offensive mind, Mike McCarthy, offensive coordinator. So they've already addressed that.
Man. Yeah. I don't know if that's the answer to it. I think the answer is to add another receiver, which is they're in desperate need of. Even if they do, though, they go first round receiver. No guarantee that player is a hit in year one. And it's a spot that we frankly knew they needed to address in previous years. They made no effort to do it, and then their money situation forced them to move on from Amari Cooper. I'm not confident they make that step to address it in a meaningful way this offseason. So if they don't do that, they're an easily exploitable team. Who knows if they're able to bring Tony Pollard back, which was the only reason their run game wasn't like the worst in the NFL. If you ever trying to do what they were doing with the tandem backfield, but only with Zeke, they'd be dead. So I think they have a lot of potential pitfalls in the offseason, and I don't really trust this team to address them. Happy about that one, by the way.
For those, my dog is also barking at every time I mention Mike McCarthy.
We're having a great show today. Lots of barking dogs, lots of malfunctioning internet.
For those who missed it, Jerry Jones said this week that Mike McCarthy is bringing his Green Bay offense to the Cowboys for 2023, and he said it with a straight face. I don't know if Jerry Jones has grinded the tape on Mike McCarthy's final two or three years in Green Bay, but he it was one of the least creative, most predictable offenses that basically used no motion and had guys in the same spots every single play. So I think this is a huge red flag for the Cowboys headed into 2023.
Speaking of not grinding the tape, it's his title's like CEO or executive vice president. Yeah. Steven Jones said they didn't see a fall off in Zeke's play. They want to bring him back. They acknowledge that it needs to financially work. But the fact that they weren't even willing to admit that they didn't see a fall off, maybe they could say like, oh, we need to change his role to get him back to where he was. No, they don't think he left where he was a good running back 5 years, 4 years ago, whatever it was. They can't even bring themselves to acknowledge it. They are just so in their own heads about it. They refuse to admit defeat in any way on a terrible contract. So that's why I don't have faith in this team doing the right things in the offseason.
But if he brings the Packers offense, it at least will mean 220 slants for CeeDee Lamb. That part would be really nice.
I have to say real quick about Zeke. So even if Steven Jones is not grinding the analytics, which I think we can bank on that not happening, okay? This guy's watching presumably every snap the Cowboys have in the regular season, and he doesn't notice that Zeke Elliott is the slowest guy on the field. Like, everybody is faster than Ezekiel Elliott, and he's saying, I don't think he lost a step. He's lost 15 steps since his prime. It's actually jarring. If you go back to Ezekiel Elliott, like, rookie season highlights and see him burst through the line and outrun people, you're like, oh, wait. This guy used to be fast. Not so anymore.
He's paying a price for his toughness. He never misses any time with injury, and the nicks and bruises accumulated quite quickly for Ezekiel Elliott. We have to go spicier than miss the playoffs. Of this year's final four teams, the Chiefs, Bengals, Eagles, and 49ers, who do we think is most likely to miss the playoffs next year? I mean, the defending Super Bowl champion Rams came nowhere near the playoffs. There's always one of the elite teams that falls off. who do we think is most likely of the big four not to make the playoffs? And this is, again, we're not saying they're going to miss the playoffs, but like, who is most likely most of those four to miss the playoffs?
Yeah, none of these teams are particularly likely to flop so hard. I mean, the Rams flop was like, I think, the worst in the past.
There's one. There's one that is.
It's 49ers.
It's the 49ers.
I had 49ers written down. That was the end of my caveat was, but if we got to pick one, what's your guys' reason? Because I have one reason that
I think so. You wouldn't 49ers fans like acted like they're like the most injury cursed team in the league. They actually have had abnormally good injury luck beyond quarterback, which of course is a humongous caveat. But like their defense actually stayed pretty healthy all year. Deebo Samuel missed a little time, but Christian McCaffrey was healthy. Mm-hmm. George Kittle had like his healthiest season. The offensive line stayed pretty healthy. Like, I think they actually had fewer injuries than like an NFL team usually does. And again, quarterback, pretty big exception. Like, their defense stayed really, really healthy by NFL standards. And like, they ran just so hot in so many different areas. Talk about like the Cowboys running hot in efficiency. Like, the 49ers were running really hot on both offense and defense. And just that couple, I think there's some obvious regression then coupled with the quarterback issue. And this, you know, Shanny's history, the way he played, it seems volatile. He's so reliant on offensive scheme that it makes the overall program like pretty volatile. And with quarterback nowhere close to solve for 2023, and now Tom Brady not walking through that door, like would a 6-11, 7-10 49ers team like really shock anybody? Danny, what's your reason though?
My reason is that they're a much worse team with Trey Lance under center.
Oh, man. I hate to say it. That was my reason, too. And the good news is they have a ripcord to pull, but that ripcord is supposedly on a six-month recovery right now. And they, I mean, I think they want to try and make Trey Lance work.
He's going to miss the whole year, by the way. I don't know where they're getting this from. Like, baseball's got some new, like, experimental, like, non-Tommy John stuff for your UCL, but UCL is a year. Like, I don't know what
I was going to say. I thought it was a longer injury, but that's what the report was 6 months.
I think it would be shocking if Brock Purdy plays at all next season.
He's going to miss an entire calendar year. There's some exceptions, like very rare exceptions, but like unless he gets like a pretty new like experimental surgery, which apparently is out there in baseball, it's going to be a year. So they don't have, I think they're going to have that ripcord.
For several reasons, this 49ers offense, this very delicate scheme that Kyle Shanahan has nurtured over the years, it doesn't work with Trey Lance. And I think that that is reflected in the fact that the 49ers players, no one was happy Trey Lance went down, obviously, but they were pumped up about having Jimmy Garoppolo back under center. It made them the feeling in that locker room per beat reporters at the time of Lance's injury was, okay, now we can get it going. Now we are contenders. It's not that way with Trey Lance. And I think the Niners are not even a playoff team with him under center.
Well, maybe they're going to add someone like Derek Carr. So I don't know. I'm not ready to.
They wouldn't add Derek Carr unless they were able to move Trey Lance, though.
I'm not going to. Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. Trey Lance isn't making much money. He's making pretty decent amount of money, but nothing crazy by quarterback standards.
No,
but I they're going to add somebody. There's no way they're going to have to add a real number two because Brock Purdy's not playing this season, and they're going to need a viable backup for Trey Lance for a variety of reasons.
I mean, they just need a guy. They don't have a third quarterback on the roster right now, and they won't have a second healthy one. So they'll need to add like just a veteran to throw balls during training camp, let alone like the fact that, the 6 months feels optimistic. And just to – and, like, I think Trey Lance could improve in his second season or in his third season, but he's played, like, well under a season's worth of football in his career. There is room for him to grow, but it is really concerning that this past year, in a limited sample, it's a minimum of 50 dropbacks. He was second to last in completion percent over expected, 50th in EPA per play. He was a little better as a rookie in his limited stints. He was – 42nd in EPA per play, 27th in CPUE. Actually, I think I have those backwards, but he was below average. And it's a system that propped up what we think are fine, but not special quarterbacks in Brock Purdy and Jimmy Garoppolo. And it propped them up to being like top 10 to top 5 in EPA per play. So the delta between those is so alarmingly large that, that's kind of where my concern lies with this team primarily. I mean, almost
exclusively. Lance has played like seriously 18 games since high school. It's not actually an exaggeration. Like he's played like 18 live football games since high school. Like it's kind of staggering, really.
It is.
And it is a big problem for the 49ers. I think the second most likely, by the way, I don't think that they're going to miss the playoffs, but I think the Bills have further to fall than either the Chiefs, Bengals, or Eagles do. Oh, the Bills didn't even make the conference championship. Yeah, right. So but the Bills have got some real issues. I think they didn't take advantage of their defense's peak. Like, they had quite a peak with that defense, and they kind of missed their peak defensive window. As we saw, they have a lack of skill player depth behind Stephon Diggs. They had a lot of offensive line injuries. They don't have, like, an elite offensive line. You can only play the way Josh Allen plays for so long before getting injured, as we've learned. And he did get injured, and then he wasn't the same after the elbow injury. I'm not going to predict the Bills to miss the playoffs, but I think the Bills have a lot further to fall than either the Chiefs or Bengals do.
I go with that. I mean, the Bills were not good for the final 2 months of the season.
No. I think the Chiefs and Bengals, I think, are pretty clearly established as, like, the big dogs at the AFC right now.
Yeah, for sure.
No offense to the Bills. So Kyle thinks the Titans might get the number one pick. Who is the most likely surprise contender for the number one overall pick beyond the usual suspects? And Kyle, why do you think it's the Tennessee Titans?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the Titans. One, this isn't a ton to their fault. The draft is a very random process. You don't see teams outperform the draft like year in, year out for the most part in terms of talent acquisition. But because I don't think they've gotten a Pro Bowler from the draft in the past 3 years, and they have one Pro Bowler from the past four drafts on their roster, because one of them, AJ Brown, they traded away.
It's problematic.
I don't want to say it's like entirely the team and the franchise's fault. The draft is random, but it does mean that they are really lacking on players who can help improve them for where they were. And we've seen Ryan Tannehill continue to trickle down until last year. Really didn't look like, I mean, there were questions, and there still are questions on if he'll even be the team's starting quarterback in this upcoming season. They really need to operate the Derrick Henry is hyper elite, and then AJ Brown is out there catching, 14 yards a target, like metric breaking stuff. Treylon Burks showed some flashes, but he's just nowhere near the talent that AJ Brown is. If they can't operate in that very hyper specific way, the offense comes apart at the seams, and they're not getting any younger in terms of Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, especially Derrick Henry. Like, he was good the past 2 years, but he was better in each of the 2 years before that by a significant margin. So I think this team still has a bottom two fallout that includes Ryan Tannehill playing for the team, but that just the style of offense they want to run is not supported by who they have.
That's a pretty compelling case, actually. They're not going to make the AFC Championship game.
No. Also, their division should get better. Like, I think the Jags have
that. Actually, is something working in their favor. Like, if you have a good coach in that division, you kind of automatically win like 8 or 9 games.
Right.
Well, I don't entirely know. Like, D'Amico Ryans was one of the most coveted coaches. They're going to get a quarterback who's not Davis Mills, which I would say by all accounts is a good thing. The Colts are going to get a quarterback who's not Matt Ryan plus Sam Ehlinger plus Nick Foles, which, a very good thing. Like, the level of at least quarterback play, but probably also coaching, is going to drastically increase around them, which is something that has just been like a feeder for them to get to 7-9 wins. That it's still not a hard division, but going from almost certainly the worst division to the sixth best division, or whatever, 7th, 8th, middle of the road, that will be very impactful for a team that has not drafted well and doesn't have rising talent. That like they need AJ, or they need Treylon Burks to really turn something around, or they need Ryan Tannehill to recapture the magic, whereas the other teams are just getting better talent-wise.
Danny, do you have a surprise contender for the number one overall pick?
Is it cheating to say the Bucks?
No, it's actually not.
I mean, the only thing that kept them from being in the top five picks this year was Tom Brady. So, that's a bad team. It's a bad roster. Lots of pieces that they're probably going to have to get rid of in the post Brady nuclear winter that they're looking at. They're way over the cap, and they have a coaching staff that was among the least creative, the least forward thinking in the entire NFL this past season. I don't think that changes. So I think the Bucks are down really, really bad for at least the next year or two.
Yeah, they're a 4 or 5 win team. So it's just a question if they get all the way to number one. The Raiders could be in the mix. The Saints could be in the mix. The Raiders and the Saints, it depends on who they get at quarterback. Saints
are so bad.
The Saints are just like a bad team that just refuses to admit they're bad. And kind of the Raiders are too, actually. They have the same. I mean, I kind of like when teams just try to compete every year. Like eventually bottom falls out, and the Saints are definitely nearing that territory where this roster is about to just implode. I mentioned the article, the Cardinals, of course. They're not a surprise.
Cardinals the most obvious one. I think they might be the betting favorite because it really looks like we're getting less than half a season from Kyler Murray. Like, all the reports are relatively negative. And at that point, you have no reason to rush him back. You want him to stay out for his own health, but for your 2024 draft picks. So they're the favorite, I think.
I'm scrolling through. There's a few teams with lower bottoms than you would. Like, the Packers could just totally implode. The Steelers, they've never done it on Mike Tomlin. The Steelers could just totally implode, I feel like.
Yeah. I was going to say the Packers, but first of all, the Steelers is not happening. As long as Mike Tomlin is in there, they're winning 8 games. It doesn't
matter. That's true.
I mean, they're not going to win fewer than 8, and they're not going to win more than 10, but that's where they are with Mike Tomlin. I wanted to say the Packers, but I actually do sort of kind of believe in Jordan Love as a viable quarterback. So.
His
all right, round up the lawyers.
So his one quarter against the Eagles made quite an impression on Denny this year.
It did look better.
There's a lot of teams, man. The Giants could implode. The Vikings could totally implode. The Vikings don't have a good roster, like, at all.
No, they have a really bad roster. Like, You're right.
The Seahawks, probably not. Pete Carroll's in kind of the Tomlin.
No, but see, that's why I push back a little bit on the Giants implosion thing. I think Brian Daboll is too good of a coach for this team to just slip back into oblivion after one good year.
By the way, I had a very troubling thought during all this, is that Andy Dalton is going to lead the San Francisco 49ers to the NFC Championship game next year.
No, he's not going to lead them to it. He is going to replace an injured whoever in the championship
game. That's true. He replaced Trey Lance in week 3, actually.
Yeah.
And then they're going to the NFC Championship game. We've gone way too long for a February 2nd show. My apologies for a really, really a choppy show today. I'm going to sue Charter Communications. No offense, Charter, but getting Denny's lawyers in the case. I will be suing you for my internet dropping out. I don't really care what the reason is. So check out my article on the site. Check out Denny and Lawrence and Matthew Berry and everyone in Glendale, Arizona. Next week, we're going to have a lot of great coverage from Super Bowl LVII. I can't remember. What's the number? Is it 57 this year?
57.
Super Bowl 57 in Glendale / Phoenix, Arizona. So check out Denny and Lawrence out in Glendale. Check out Kyle and I here. I don't know what we'll be doing.
Watch this show again. Just watch it again.
we'll rewatch the show. So for Denny, for Kyle, I'm Pat. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.